Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, it's the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 194. Nerdist Channel has a bunch of new episodes of stuff this week. All-Star Celebrity Bowling, a brand new face-to-face with Weird Al Yankovic. Go to YouTube.com/Nerdist to see all of the video delights we're cooking up for your eyes and ears over there. And then click subscribe so we don't die. Thank you.
Our returning sponsor to the Nerdist Podcast is Stamps.com.
I don't know why I was taking all NPR like that, Katie. Why do I have to get all NPR sometimes? Whether you're running a business or you're working from home or you're selling items through online sites, be it Etsy or any kind of thing that you want to sell and send out to, if you want to use the mail, Stamps.com is perfect if you're operating out of your home, because you don't have to leave your house. You don't have to go to a post office. You print out postage from your computer, any computer really, if you have a Stamps.com account, and then Mr. Postman will come pick it right up. You put it outside, and then he will know what to do. So that's it. It is a one-stop shop. You print out the exact amount of postage you need. You slap it on. You can print on an envelope if you want to. And someday, maybe you'll be able to print onto a box. Oh, box printer. Wouldn't that be fun? We don't have those yet. Oh, technology, someday. Right now, Stamps.com has a special offer for Nerdist Podcast listeners. Using the promo code Nerdist, you get a no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, which includes a digital scale and $55 in free postage. So please don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That is it. Stamps.com and enter the promo code Nerdist. You guys, you can't see it, but I'm throwing up the horns right now. I am throwing up the mother friggin' horns. This episode is Tenacious D. I am so times a million psyched that we got them on the podcast. Jack and Kyle came over to Swing House Studios in Los Angeles. We sat down, recorded an episode of the podcast, and then they played songs at the end from their upcoming album, Rise of the Phoenix, which comes out May 15th. I got a preview copy of it, and the album fucking kicks ass. Not only is the music great, but it's this really kind of honest story about what happened from the last Tenacious D album to this Tenacious D album, with Jack getting super famous and kind of leaving Kyle behind, and it's really good. Like, the whole album tells a really nice story. I think it's a genuinely fantastic rock album. So Tenacious D, Rise of the Phoenix, out May 15th. And now, right here for you, they're going to play a song at the end of the podcast from the upcoming album. And then some older stuff that I requested. I tried to play Puppet Master a little bit with Tenacious D. Like, will you play this song? And they were awesome and totally obliged. So I send you huge satanic hugs, Jack and Kyle. Thanks for coming on the Nerdist Podcast, number 193. Tenacious D. I just turned into Brian Posehn for a sec. Tenacious D! Please don't tell Brian that I imitate him that way. I loves him.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Well, here we are.
I think we already just started.
We did.
Wait, let me put on my headphones.
That was a soft opening.
We like to stumble into the recordings.
We always have a soft takeoff.
We
take
had Tenacious D. Yeah. Opus 5, number 4.
Opus 5.
I don't hear much.
When I hear Opus, I just think of that delicious Opus 1. That delicious wine. Have you ever tried that yummy wine?
No.
Opus 1. Oh, it's very expensive.
I just Does it have a woody texture?
I don't know.
Is it oaky?
It kind of tastes like the milkshake of wines. It's like a deliciously sweet.
If they put that on the fucking label, they would sell the shit out of that.
They kind of do with that brand Cake Bread.
Cake Bread.
It's like, oh, tastes like cake wine.
Yep.
They also have a just like chocolate milk wine. Have you tried that?
No.
It's horrible because of how good it is. You taste it and you're like, oh, I could just fucking get fucked up off
of it. Oh, you're not joking. This is a real thing.
This is a real thing that I made a mistake drinking an entire bottle of.
Chocolate milk wine?
So it's like Mike's Hard Lemonade, where it's like, it's just delicious lemonade. And then before you know it, you're shit-faced.
It's like in a fancy bottle, and then you pour it in, it looks just like chocolate milk, tastes just like chocolate milk.
Can I submit a stupid, hacky, jokey name?
Sure.
Yoo-hoo-hoo!
Doggy.
Is that okay, or is that not?
I'll let them know next time I buy it from the liquor store.
That sounds like a fucking Hee-Haw sketch.
Yeah. You get that chocolate milk wine. So one bottle, and you were shit-faced?
I don't know if I finished the bottle.
Right.
Yeah.
And then was there barf?
No. I rarely barf from puking.
But it wasn't.
You really what?
I really.
So puking
really
doesn't make you throw up.
No, it's an interesting thing. But puking makes me barf.
Okay.
But throwing up makes me. No, I rarely puke from drinking.
But do you remember the night?
A bit.
It was not. Was it a good buzz? Were you having a good time?
Yeah, it was actually a lot of fun because the amount of sugar in it, it's almost like having one of those like sparks, like energy booze liquors, and you're just wired and drunk and having a blast.
Well, I'm sorry to catch you in an inaccuracy, but you said I made the mistake of drinking the whole bottle.
The hangover.
The next day. Yeah, right.
Any sugary booze will do that, though.
You forgot to eat the cookies.
Oh, really?
Did you feel like recounting a historical event at that moment?
I did. I felt it. Its importance was just as much as any other historical
event. Is that a reference to drunk history?
It was. It was pretty opaque.
Yeah.
I have to say, but now whenever somebody gets really drunk, I want them to.
It's any drunken time that doesn't get filmed with history is a missed opportunity now.
Yeah.
Have you guys checked out Drunk History?
We have seen the shit out of Drunk History.
I remember Derek talking about it for years and everyone going, yeah, you should put that together, weirdo. And then became the internet. That became the internet.
Wow. So he was walking around talking up his show before there was a show?
He was talking about it a lot. He's like, I just think it'd be funny. And then he would go and reference like Candlebox or something like that. And then he would go on to talk about...
No, wait, was that just you shitting on him referencing the band Candlebox?
That's all he does. He just references Candlebox. And amidst every conversation that comes up.
Behind! You're allowed to love Candlebox if you also are a genius. Like Derek, right?
Yeah, I think so. I let it go.
Well, that's the rule.
His crazy obsession with Pearl Jam.
So it's more of a... So liking Candlebox is an acceptable quirk, but not actually a respectable thing.
It's pretty much if you're Einstein, you can love Matchbox 20, and you lose almost none of your...
I want to push you around. Yeah. I want to push you around.
That's the,
was he a Nazi?
When a guy like that listens to a shitty band, you're just like, you go, no, maybe I could see it. I could see they're pretty. They have their parts. There's
exactly.
Parts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He'll change the world to liking them.
Shit, I don't know if I'm good enough. I like a little bit physics.
I don't see the two working together.
Dude, we could admit some songs and bands that we like that would be...
Sure.
All right, let's do it. We'll all admit a song in advance.
I don't think we're not genius enough, though, to warrant our love of some of the shitty music that we like.
I'm going to stop.
Mm-bop.
Really?
I kind of, I respect Hanson.
Yeah.
They weren't a teeny bopper band. I mean, they were to an extent, but they all played their own instruments and wrote their own music.
That's Kyle's, though. I'm not going to jump on that. Okay, that's Kyle's.
You're not going to defend
it? Kyle loves mm-bop. Pleasure.
I was more, I have a weakness for the...
Yo, Joseph, I'm sorry. You're fucking with a different story. It's a world in my hand, and you're in letters from me.
It's because of that part.
Letters from me.
Yes.
I love it.
What's yours, Jonah?
One Headlight by the Wallflowers.
Oh.
I just, I can't, every time I put it, if it's on the radio, I don't turn it off. I turn it up, and then I feel like I'm in some movie in a shitty truck driving down a lonely country road. listening to Bob Dylan's Horrible Son.
Yeah.
Part of, one of those is true.
Yeah.
I'm looking up.
I like how they always say with Wallflowers, discovered at the Kibitz Room at Cantor's. Someone discovered he was Bob Dylan's son while drinking at the Kibitz Room at Cantor's.
Yeah.
So anyway, this next song was written by me, the son of Bob Dylan, yes. who, wait, I think he might be Bob Dylan's
yeah.
son.
They are one of those bands, though, where their people will just, they'll go, yeah, that first album, yeah, whatever, they had the hit, but the second album, there's always someone that likes the second album of a one-hit wonder.
Of course.
Someone did the math, and he sold, like, more records with his one album than Bob Dylan did in his entire career.
Really?
Well, no. It couldn't be that. That couldn't
be the actual
stats.
Someone did the math and the math was wrong?
The math.
But he did sell a lot more than you would think.
A lot more than Bob, I think.
It's kind of like how Ringo Starr sold more hit singles than any other Beatle in there. Am I wrong about that? Isn't that
he did pretty well. Right.
Is that possible? Yeah, than any other Beatle on their solo-ness.
Really? More than Imagine?
Come on. Get him,
know.
Pitch.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe that's true.
Even if it's not true, I do like...
When you gotta sing and you gotta sing the blues and you know it don't...
It's kind of the same phenomenon of how Becker was a huge hit and you don't know anybody that listens to Becker.
Right.
It's the same thing with Ringo Starr's like singles. He had huge hits that...
I thought that way for a long time about Garth Brooks.
Right.
He's like the biggest musician
Hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
Well, what do you get? You fucking fly around a stage at your live show. I don't buy that album.
Hey, you know something? Everyone got friends in low places, Joan. Why don't you open up your fucking mind?
Is that a reference to a Garth Brooks song?
It is a reference to a Garth Brooks song.
Was it? I liked that there was one Halloween where Ken Daly was, what was the alter ego of Garth Brooks?
Oh, Chris...
Chris Haynes.
Black hair. Oh, Chris Haynes.
That's magic Haynes. There.
Yeah.
Like that was his Sasha Fierce.
Yes, exactly.
That was Garth Brooks'
Did you have that album?
We need an alter ego.
No, I never... I listened to it once because it was just... we were working at a record store. It came out. We're like, this will be hilarious. And it was just so middle of the road that...
It wasn't...
Your alter ego should be like the Free Design, where you do these kind of upbeat, completely non-ironic... songs about just things you like.
Well, it's only funny when they're not joking.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when it's really funny.
Yeah, like Chris a bad
Gaines.
Movie.
Chris Gaines. Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines. That's it. Chris Gaines.
That's driving me crazy. Yeah.
Oh, here's the...
sorry.
What did we say? Haynes? Did we say Chris Haynes?
I said Chris Haynes.
Yeah. I remember it was Ken Daly, our friend, was like, I couldn't tell what he was. And he's like, oh, I'm here. I'll show you. And then he just did the pose from the album cover. I was like, oh, Chris Gaines.
Like emo. That was emo Garth Brooks, right?
Yeah.
That was the Serena to Garth's Samantha.
And there was a whole backstory, and they were going to do a movie.
Yeah.
Based on the backstory of Chris Gaines.
Well, that's good that didn't happen.
Yeah. And if you saw Garth Brooks' Saturday Night Live appearance, I wouldn't recommend an entire movie being done on him.
Well, he just sort of made fun of his Chris Gaines, though. He didn't really do the Chris Gaines on the Saturday Night Live episode.
Well, he hosted the entire episode.
But not as Chris Gaines.
Not as Chris Gaines. That would have been
That
great.
Was the thing. That's what everyone was hoping, was that he had really gone off the deep end for this Chris Gaines and was going to commit, but he didn't fully commit. He realized somewhere along the line.
I don't want to freak everyone out, but I've never seen Garth Brooks and Chris Angel in the same room.
Ooh.
Do you think
that Chris Angel's wearing a fat suit?
Yeah.
Well, no, but when he was Chris Gaines, he did get like emaciated. He was really skinny.
Yeah,
that was part of the transformation.
Exactly, because he did look. That's what Gaines was all about.
Who would have thought that Garth Brooks would become a Vegas act too? That's weirding me out right now.
Well, I'm obsessed with Vegas acts. I was thinking. I think me and Kyle, we're not far off from our Vegas act.
You might be far off,
but don't you think people would come?
I think I think they absolutely would come, but I also think I understand the appeal of Vegas. If you've been a touring act your entire life and you just want to make a pile of money without having to travel all the time, I totally understand.
Well, like the Roots. Yeah. Like the Roots when became the house band for Fallon, they don't have to tour anymore.
But the other great thing about Garth Brooks like being just a Vegas act is
the
that
other
he,
great thing or just the great thing.
Well, one of many great things that I think we will all agree on. Is that he never has to write another new song again as long as he lives. Like all Vegas people want to hear is just the songs that they already recognize.
Yeah.
So
I think that's all anyone wants to hear.
No, that's not
when you go to a show.
Yeah.
I remember with REM, they'd always like, oh man, they didn't play any of their hits.
I remember I went to see REM and there was a drunk dude screaming, Radio Free Europe, fucker! And he added fucker to the end.
It sounds like part of the title. Yeah.
And I didn't really know, because I was not hep to their hit single.
Their back catalog.
And I thought Radio Free Europe, fucker was a song.
Radio Free
That was the parenthetical.
Europe, fucker.
Fucker was in the parenthetical. Yeah.
And they did not play it.
They did not play Radio Free Fargo.
That'd be like if we didn't play Tribute or something.
Yeah.
It's like, it's saying, hey, we're more than that song.
Yeah.
That is an interesting struggle, though. Like, you, I mean, I always think as a comedian, I can tell, I can do the same bits for a while,
yeah,
but not forever. And so as a musician, like, how do you, like, how do you get up and play Tribute and keep it fresh and still, like, make it fun and make it feel new?
Ska version.
Oh.
I'm never concerned about feeling stale because the roar of the crowd is its own fresh, it's a freshener. When you hear the, because when Kyle does a Dirlanny, and it's so loud that it shakes your chestal cavity.
Yep.
And it shakes up, it shakes off the mold that might have been on the song from how old it is.
Yep.
And it rises like the phoenix.
Oh, wait a minute. What? Your new subtle album is called Rise of the Phoenix.
Subtle plug, subtle plug.
How did you do that?
I don't know. It just seemed right. It felt like it fit right there.
I'm still in Vegas doing our act, though. What are the other great things about being in Vegas?
Here's the other great things.
The food.
Yeah, good food. You just park it. It becomes automatic.
They let you stay in like the gnarliest hotel room, probably.
But I think once you just get a, you would, if you're there, you would get a house.
Yeah, you would not live in the hotel room.
I think you do. I think they do.
You'd commute in from Henderson.
But it'd be so rad.
It'd be so rad to be in a, like, a fucking Vegas hotel and be like, that's a piano where Liberace had coke blown into his ass by a young Wayne Newton. Like there must be, like, Vegas must be drenched with those, those stories.
But the mafia is gone, right? That's what they say.
Now it's a corporate mafia.
And now the corporate mafia is. But, you know, you'd get a suite crib, be it, you know, the hotel or a house. What else would be good?
Circus.
Shrimp cocktails.
Oh, getting to hang out with the worst people imaginable.
That's true, yeah.
Who are in fuck it mode because they're in Vegas and don't give a shit about anything. That would be awesome.
We'd be right there for the World Series of Poker if you ever wanted to do that.
Right.
You just plug right in.
Right, you're there. Yeah, you're in the middle.
You can constantly be performing for Middle America because they are always coming to you.
That's
in
right.
Vegas.
But speaking of which, it's on my bucket list to do the World Series of Poker one time.
Are you good?
You ever watch this World Series of Poker on the ESPN?
I'm not really much of a poker player.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kyle got me addicted early on. And now
I don't think you'd enjoy it. Hey, Jack, what are you doing?
Yeah, but I could use my celebrity to distract
them. To outfox them?
And win pots. I do that sometimes. Yeah. I befriend them or hypnotize them with a tale of Hollywood yore. And before they know it, I've bluffed them out of their fucking shorts.
Like the snake Ka from Jungle Book. You just stare in their eyes.
Yeah.
And your eyes get all pinwheely. And then they.
That's the first Ka reference I've had all day.
Yeah. Yesterday, though.
This is the longest you've gone.
And then Pauly Shore told us he wanted us to be in Biodome.
What? Oh, I just lost.
Yeah, that's right, bitch. That's my money now.
Oh, but that story was so good. What were they? Oh, I never told you my guilty pleasure song.
Yes.
Was by up. I'm sad to admit this, but you all did. It's everything so blurry and everyone's up. You know the one that goes, can you take it all away?
Oh, jeez.
Is
that Puddle of Mud?
Yeah, Puddle of Mud with two D's.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that your song, too?
No, they just sounded, they had the same kind of hook.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of a major minor thing.
I have to confess, whenever I hear about Puddle of Mud, there was a while where we were really being pretty mean to Puddle of Mud. Like whenever we were on stage, I would talk shit about Puddle of Mud for some reason. It just bothered me that he was doing a Kurt Cobain, you know.
Yeah, right.
He was filling those shoes, and I thought he was posing a lot in the music video. And I don't remember what I said, but then when we saw him at the Gorge, we were at the festival up there years and years ago, and I met him. And I felt like he knew that I had been talking shit, but he didn't say it. He was like, hey, man, how's it going? Just want you to know that I'm a big fan. And I was like, yeah, man, yeah. Feelings mutual.
And it just hung a lot of italicized.
And I was like, all right,
man, I'm going to go over there.
It's not mutual when I'm on stage.
I'm a big fan.
But if
just
I was,
let you know.
If I was a real man, I would have said, hey, I got to confess, man. I have talked some shit about you.
Oh, no. But what is that? That's a real sign of masculinity to bring that up?
Well, to be forthright.
But what if you said that? He's like, what? I just told you I was a big fan, and here you go telling me you make fun of me on stage?
You know what's got
to
be hard, though, is that Listen, I lost my headphones. I don't know if we're still being recorded. Anyway, yeah. But what must be tough is that you are a human being like anyone else with opinions.
Yeah.
But you guys are famous, and so when you say your opinions, yeah. they get out in the world, yeah. and then people, it's like you're almost more accountable
yeah.
than most people. So I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, I don't, yeah, sure. But then inside you go, why'd I talk shit about that guy?
Dude, it has happened a few times where it's blown up in my face.
What?
There was another time. We did a show where, here's what happened. I went to do this thing. It was an Obama thing at the, it was a Kennedy Center honors thing, and they were honoring a bunch of people. And I was there to like say something about Mel Brooks. Mm-hmm. And then who else was? No, it was for The Who. I was honoring.
I get The Who and Mel Brooks mixed up all the time.
Constantly.
Okay, anyway, I did two of them. And so then afterwards, I'm sitting there at the special Kennedy Center dinner eating the chicken. And I'm sitting next to a dude from, what's it called?
Matchbox 20?
Yeah, Matchbox 20.
Oh, Rob.
Yeah.
Rob Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Rob Thomas. And he goes, hey, I saw you guys one time at the El Rey.
Uh-oh.
And it was really funny because you said, bring me the head of the singer of Matchbox 20. And I guess you didn't know that I was actually in the audience. And it was just very, very weird because, you know, people looked around at me and they were like, oh, he wants me to bring you his head. And yeah, so it was weird. But I'm a huge fan. And I was like, oh, my God, dude, let me tell you. And then it was like right in my face that I, you know, and I couldn't.
Then you have to say, plan worked, and you cut off his head. Right, you fucking cut off his head. That's the only way you can get out of that, Jack.
No, what I said was, dude, you know, we go after everyone. It's a form of a compliment.
You, we've gone after mud. You.
Yeah.
You again. That's just, everyone.
That's just us. No one's safe, man. Nothing's sacred.
But he pretty much took it in stride, though. I think that's another thing. When you have attained a certain level of notoriety, you have to have a shell. You've got to have like a certain amount of steel to protect yourself from the slinging shit.
Well, especially the sort of the voice of Tenacious D, you know. I mean, I almost feel like, you know, people really shouldn't take anything you say too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, it's all in fun. You know, it's not like Chris Gaines on stage.
Right. Chris, no, welcome Garth Brooks.
Yeah. I mean, they should understand, like, I think I would be honored.
Right, because that's what I'm saying.
It's sort of like you know.
Yeah, you were thought of enough to actually.
Well, I'd like to preemptively say that we do. Nah, fuck it. I'm not gonna send any warnings. You know what I was about to say?
No.
I was just gonna talk about Rock is Dead.
Oh, hey, my God.
I'm just worried because we do a little mean shout out to someone in that song in the upcoming album.
People are gonna hear it anyway.
Yeah.
So just reveal.
Yeah.
What is it?
Nah, fuck it. Never mind. It's
Lenny. Well, guess. Lenny Kravitz.
No. It was Axl Rose.
Oh.
Oh.
And
couldn't be any worse than what Andy
I don't
Preboy
think Axl Rose
White
exists.
Then I kept on going back. Oh, exactly. Dude,
right?
That's true.
So whatever you say about Axl Rose is not worse than what White Trash Wins Lotto
But they
said
never
about
name
Rose.
Checked him in that. They never
Everyone
said his
knew.
Name. Everyone knew.
Everyone fucking knew.
Did he shut it down? Did he cease and desist that himself?
I don't know. I feel like that went on for a long time. I think maybe it just ran its course naturally.
But for those of people listening to this podcast, if you haven't heard of White Trash Wins Lotto, it was an incredible musical about Guns N' Roses, and it used no Guns N' Roses songs.
No.
It was all original, like Broadway musical type music.
We'll
Would
call
you
it
describe
the,
it?
We'll call it the subtext of Guns N' Roses.
It was an incredible show, and I saw it like 100 times at Largo.
Right.
And it was kind of a tragic story because the dude that wrote that musical had the world in his hands. It was the most popular show at Largo. People were packed, lying around the block to see it every night. And then dude from Boogie Nights, director, Paul Thomas Anderson, mm-hmm. was like, I love it. I want to make a movie out of this. And then dude that created White Trash Wins Lotto went kind of off the deep end, I think, a little bit.
A little bit.
He was just a little high on his own supply, and he said, I will allow you to direct it with the following conditions. A, I have complete creative control. I have complete control over the casting. I have absolute script approval. I will be on the set in your back pocket. I will get co-director. I will also have, you know, just, I'm making these things up.
Right, right, right.
But he just had a bunch of demands.
So it was like, this sounds like a lot of work.
And then Paul Thomas Anderson was like, never mind. So what happened was nothing. And then it just disappeared. And I don't know what it's
ever
happened.
That was Andy Preboy. Andy Preboy was in Wall and Voodoo, right? He was in Wall and Voodoo, I think.
Yeah.
Am I right about that, Jonah?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently past the cool time. I don't know. Was there a cool time for Wall of Voodoo?
Well, for Mexican radio.
Yeah.
Wall of Voodoo.
He wasn't there during the Wall of the Mexican radio.
Yeah. Okay.
He came in right after that.
You know,
on the downslide of Wall of Voodoo.
God, we were all, I think everyone remembers exactly where they were when they heard Wall of Voodoo broke up. Jack, where were you?
Oh, yeah. No, I was sitting on the can, and my mom yelled at me. I just heard a scream, and then I heard plates breaking, and I came out with my pants over my legs. What? I was in Hermosa Beach in 1987.
I think we all have a similar tale. We all, our moms all told us about Wall of Voodoo.
No!
This guy, KG, and I, many years ago, did a little show called Rock of Ages together, which was fucking fun.
God, it was fun, wasn't it?
It was so much fun.
Don't forget about the fun.
Million Dollar Karaoke, Rock of Ages. We did it at just like a small rock club here in L.A., and then it went to Broadway, and now it's a... And now
Tom Cruise is playing your role.
I know! That's so...
I know!
I still... I mean,
and I have Alec Baldwin playing my part.
You have Alec Baldwin playing him?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I
have not seen the Broadway version of Rock of Ages.
Nor have I. I heard there was a guy that was incredible and did a really good Jack Black impersonation.
The guy, yeah. The guy that played Lonnie.
What's disturbing is that I've seen the commercials that he's done, the Keystone beer. And he does bear a striking resemblance to like the cloned version of me that's like a little taller and better looking. But he's got all the eyebrow powers and he's got all my things, but just slightly better in every other way. It's very annoying.
You know what's... Now, this is an interesting... Just to tie...
He's the T-1000 version of me.
Liquid metal.
Yeah.
Liquid Jack Black.
This is interesting because this sort of ties into what you said earlier about... A Puddle of Mud or all those bands being Cobain knockoffs, as soon as there's a weird sort of Darwinian thing that happens where, you know, like, you know, let's say Pearl Jam gets popular or Stone Temple Pilots or whatever, and then all of a sudden all the A&R people all go out and start finding the copy band. So it's not like those people are necessarily purposely trying to rub others. It's just that's what's being delivered to the public.
Yeah.
And so when you guys popped and you got super famous, I cannot tell you... Pilot season after pilot season, you know, a young Jack Black type.
Yeah.
Like, you became a fucking type.
Yeah.
And I saw so many, like, dudes doing that just doing an impression of you. It was okay, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's weird.
What are we doing?
Yeah. And then everyone got tired of Jack Black type. And it wasn't my fault. It's everyone doing the type.
No,
it's all the types.
It's timeless.
Out there fucking
it's
it up.
Timeless.
How did you sell the Tenacious D? Do you guys was Actors Gang or you guys was your Actors Gang background?
It was Actors Gang was what brought us together. There's a theater company in the 80s called the Actors Gang. They're still here.
Mm-hmm.
But we were there at the beginning, at the earliest, at the roots. Okay, not at the very beginning.
No.
But we were there like in the early stages.
Prime time.
And and we were like the musical dudes of the theater company. And we just started hanging out and became best stoner buddies. And we would go over to KJ's apartment and just jam. Smoke pot and pretend like we were in a rock band. I would bring over Jack in the Box in exchange for lessons. Because there were good times. There were golden times.
I heard a story, and I think maybe Chris Lorenzo told me this story, where you, I think he said there was something like an apartment with pizza boxes everywhere, and you sat down and you had this weird vision and you scribbled out this logo
And you wrote Tenacious D on it, and you were like, this is it.
That's not true.
Okay. I like the mythology of that story, though.
But there's some truth to that that junkiness to it. But
it wasn't pizza boxes. It was Jack in the Box wrappers.
Oh, right.
That's Jack the only. Yeah. Yeah.
I do have a theory, though, that all good art comes from junkie hangouts. Everything that comes like from a clean place where people gather to for the purpose of making something is not as good as just we just happen to be hanging out and funny shit that makes us laugh accidentally happened. And then we were like, we should just do this live. We should do this as a show. That's going to be the best stuff. Do you know what I mean, Cage?
I knew there was a reason I should stop cleaning my desk.
Yeah,
I think I know
what. We're chasing the dragon, and we just got to get messy again. Okay,
I think what you're saying is that the best comedy comes from that sort of spontaneous, organic part of your brain, rather than the let's engineer a comedy thing part of the brain. I think they come from two different parts of the brain. One's more creative, and the other is a little more like, I don't know. It. This is what comedy would be like.
And I guess there's artificial. There's no real. I mean, there's lots of ways to skin a cat. There's great shows on TV that, you know, are manufactured, but it seems to me the best shit is like the Coen Brothers stuff where it's like those guys were just hanging out. Forget it.
You just got bored with it.
I got bored.
I can see in your eyes. You're like, I'm bored with my own thought.
I thought you got lost in the fantasy of just thinking about the Coen brothers hanging out.
Yeah. Oh, well, like, well, right now, what makes me laugh are the things that I get excited about watching is like a new Eastbound and Down episode is coming.
Yeah.
And you know those dudes are just stoners hanging out, making each other laugh, and they just happen to, you know, get into the industry. Mm-hmm. It's not the other way around where it's like they were independent. It's like it comes from a friendship. It's like they'd be hanging out whether or not they had a show. They'd be hanging out.
Yeah.
And funny shit would be happening that would be way funnier than the quote-unquote pros of comedy.
Yeah.
Like when me and Cage first got in back in the 80s and going to comedy clubs, we were looking around at the other comedians doing sketches and stand-up and going, God, these guys aren't funny at all. And they're like, they're really successful comedians because... what was funnier to us was just natural stupidity.
Right.
It's hard to explain, but...
No, as opposed to, like, jokey pun song.
Yeah.
I mean, you really redefined... there for the longest time, you could not bring a guitar into a comedy club without people going, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What's he going to fucking... There's a bathroom on the right. You know, just like that kind of stuff.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And so... I had a very small with my best friend, a musical comedy duo, and we were only able to get booked in clubs because you guys made it okay. We stopped doing clubs because we realized that people didn't want to sit through basically a 4-minute musical sketch. But but anyway, you sort of re-ushered in the it's okay to do music and comedy together on stage.
Nice. I didn't know that.
It's absolutely true.
Well, yeah, before that, Guitar Comics really had a really bad rap.
You mean we made it possible for other musical comedy acts to come after us?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like say...
I wasn't aware of that.
Flight of the Conchords.
What? No, it's like night and day. Potato, patata.
They do folk. And we do rock.
It's an entirely different beast.
They don't know.
I can't think of one similarity.
Well, the other thing about friends getting together and fucking around and getting stuff made, Heat Vision and Jack, fucking amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yes, good times.
Isn't that the most expensive pilot ever made?
It was. That was its Achilles heel.
Where'd all the money go? Come on.
It was the coolest.
And the money wasn't on the screen?
More than anything else on the network.
Thank God that didn't go. You would have been stuck in a TV show for 7 years.
Ben Stiller directed that, and he's a genius. But he also has very expensive taste. Like Tropic Thunder was a blast to do, but it was also incredibly expensive. We were out in the most beautiful part of Hawaii filming the whole thing and had like Oscar, multi-Oscar award-winning cinematographer John Toll, who like shot the Thin Red Line. It's like, really? Do we need that? Does that make it funnier? And it does make it funnier, but it does make it better. And but that's the, it's a plus and a minus.
That's what it was. That's the thing that I think I was getting at before is, and it's the same thing with Tropic Thunder and the same thing with your music, is it's not just like, oh, these are two guys who learned three chords. You can tell that the musicianship is awesome. You can tell with Tropic Thunder. Tropic Thunder was my favorite movie. Was it 2009 that came out? I got to see Tropic Thunder in L.A., and then I went to Memphis to visit my dad, and I saw it in a theater with Memphians, and the two different audiences laughed in entirely different places.
Oh, really?
My dad thought the booty... he thought that commercial at the booty beginning... Juice. Booty was an actual commercial. He was like... Why would they play that commercial? And I'm like, yeah, that was part of the movie. He was like, what? I go, yeah, he said pussy in it. Like, that's, you don't, it's not okay in a theater. And he was like, oh, I guess I didn't think about that. But it's the idea of the...
Your dad didn't have the ironic detachment?
He did not have it at all. My dad is very... Come on, Dan. He believes what you... He believes everything he sees. Yeah. He is America. But it's the idea of having the quality of the construction of the piece be so well executed. And then on top of that, the extra layer of, oh, it's also fucking funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're not just falling back on, you know, just jokes. Like, I listened to your new album, Rise of the Phoenix.
Oh, did you?
And it's so fucking awesome. Like, the music. I was in the shower this morning playing on my iPhone through a speaker. I was singing Double Team in the shower this morning.
Oh, nice.
What? And just fucking digging on the music and the breakdowns. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't disagree with Chris on that.
I have to agree. The music is powerful.
Who'd you get to play on this one?
What did we get to play?
Who did you get to play like other people? Like, did you get some of the Vandals guys?
No. The same dudes as the last album. Okay. We got Dave Grohl on drums. He's always been our drummer on all the albums. Very fortunate that we somehow have hypnotized him to doing it.
Yeah, why does he keep coming back?
I don't know.
Loves comedy,
it seems.
Figure
it out.
He is funny. He seems funny. I don't know Dave Grohl, but he seems funny.
It's the only time he really feels like he's back at Nirvana level of, of quality is when he is with the D.
He's doing all right on his own.
That's weird that he's living vicariously through you to get to his old band.
He just, when he gets with the D behind the kid, he's like, finally, I'm back with
Christ.
No, I think he just whatever. He, you know what? We are simpatico in the sense of humor department, and we have the same taste in rock. So he's championed us. He's a sweet guy. If he's kind of shepherded us. He saw us early on at the Viper Room before we had a TV show or anything like that, with like, you know, 50 people in the audience, and he sort of nurtured us and helped us along our way. We owe him a great debt. And then Kyle assembled the rest of the band because he's kind of like the dude that creates bands. He's got an incredible mind for an instinct for young talent.
I'm the Svengali.
You're a Svengali. Did you ever see that movie, The Idol Maker, with Richard Gere?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Kyle's like Richard Gere in The Idol Maker.
He wasn't in that, was he?
Wasn't he?
No.
Who was the idol maker?
Let's just say it was Richard Gere. Oh. Who gives a shit? Is anyone really going to go watch it after hearing this?
Let's stop down and figure it out.
Kyle found some musicians, and I have to applaud him. I wish that I could take credit for the band.
John Spiker on bass.
But Kyle handpicked young talent.
John Kineski on
guitar.
Who
were virtually unknown before.
Shreddy, John Kineski.
Yes, that's right. You know John.
I know John. I know Spiker, too.
Yeah. And I always marvel at our band. When we go out and play, when we play live, we got Brooks Wackerman on drums.
That's not a real name.
It is. And his whole family are incredible drummers.
Really?
Yeah, the Wackermans.
I know. That can't be, can it?
Yeah.
It's got whack in the name.
I know.
That's a percussive name.
It's an onomatopoeia.
I saw you guys in Atlanta at whatever the Atlanta basketball stadium was, like several years ago. Yeah, I ran into you at the airport right after we had done Rock of Ages, and you're like, we're playing a show, and you invited me, and I came, and it was fucking great.
I remember that was like the last show of the tour. Didn't we end it on Atlanta? I think we closed it out in Atlanta. Was that the Pick of Destiny, or was that before that?
I don't think Pick had come Maybe Pink had just come out, because I think...
Was it just us, or was there a band?
There was a band, and then there was a whole, like, I think there might have been a Going to Hell storyline.
Oh, yeah. No, show. That was the Pink of Destiny tour, yeah. God,
that was wild.
That was fun. I remember that was a good show. That was a crazy venue, yeah. It was like a basketball court or something.
I feel like it's as a comedian, I would always think, oh, my God, I want to open for Tenacious D, and I have a lot of friends who've opened for you guys, and it's tough, because everyone wants to see... You,
I know.
And so it's sort of what our friends the Chuck Norris
come on with Rivkin and Kirk Ward.
Michael Rivkin and Kirk.
Yes. Oh, Kirk.
Superfloss.
Superfloss.
Oh yeah.
Yes,
it's a rough slot even if you're a funny band. Yeah, because our fans, a lot of them apparently are not fans of music. They really just are fans of Tenacious D. So even if you're really good, too bad.
Yeah.
And that's why I actually prefer to have people we don't know open for us, so that when they receive the punishment, I don't feel as bad. I'm not in the wings going, oh, that's my friend. You're crushing.
Maybe we should scold them before and force them to have an open.
Do you want to like rush out when your friends are on stage having a tough time and say to everyone like, people, these are guests in our home. Can you please?
Well, Bobcat Goldthwait always tells stories about when he was opening up for Nirvana and how horrible it was and how people would just throw shit.
Why would he want to open for Nirvana?
Because Kurt wanted him to open up for him. And he would just like be dying on stage. He looked to the side, and it's Kurt Cobain cracking up after, you know, because it's how funny he's bombing.
Well, that's what we were thinking when we hired our friend Neil Hamburger.
Neil Hamburger, yeah.
Because part of his thing is he's kind of the worst comedian ever. Is part of his shtick.
Yeah,
that's his
even
life.
Though he's actually one of the most hilarious, but his persona, you know, his character that he's got. Just tells these horrible punchlines to the most hilarious setups, you know, about, you know, the Chili Peppers, disgusting hygiene, and Courtney Love's disgusting pussy.
I love the Michael Jackson, why Michael Jackson dangles baby off the balcony.
Yeah. What was that?
It was punishment for not finishing his plate of cum.
Exactly. So it's like
cranberry sauce.
The audience is just so fucking good. Booing, and just but half of them are like fucking exploding with laughter. But the idea was that when he gets booed or you know, people want him to get off stage, he like the Incredible Hulk, where he just gets stronger.
It's fuel, yeah.
Or like King Kong, when you try to zap him with electricity.
Yep.
He actually gets more
muscly.
He gets
muscly. More gorillier.
That was a good comment.
I remember reading a review it was a review, I think maybe from a British newspaper of you guys played in England, and they reviewed Neil Hamburger like he was an actual comedian, like he needs to go back and rework his jokes. Like you're Britain. You totally should get this. What the fuck?
Yeah, and Neil Hamburger doesn't like doing well. It's like he seems to like resent the crowd when they're laughing at him. He seems he'd rather go to a place that doesn't know who he is. Or
although he is kind of a complex dude. Sometimes his feelings will be hurt if they don't like him in a certain way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's particular about the way he wants to be despised.
That is a very interesting approach to performing, where you are trying to. I mean, because usually as comedians, you're just like, oh, I just want people to laugh. But when you're trying to engineer a specific kind of reaction in a specific way, that's some weird next level comedy writing shit.
Yeah, that's how I felt when I first saw him. I was like, this guy is on another level. But for this upcoming tour, we found a band that we've actually played with before that we think is going to be really good. They're not funny. They're just really, really good rock and roll.
Yep.
From Detroit. And their sound is so strong and just basic, like pure, that I think the audiences will be forced to enjoy. And they got a good strong sound, and they can withstand any kind of
Do they have a name?
Oh, the Sights.
The Sights.
You ever heard of the Sights?
No.
What's Sights spelled? S-I-G-H-T?
Yeah, S-I-G-H-T-S.
And they're opening for you on this tour?
Well, I don't know yet. We've asked them to. Do we know if they're coming? I think they might.
I think it's good. Why would they not?
Because they might be like, they might say, what the fuck, man? We're not clowns.
I don't care. I don't care how big a tour it is. We're not fucking clowns. We're not opening for clowns.
And then one guy raises his hand. He's like, I kind of always wanted to be a clown. That's why I got the small car. Drive to gigs.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
They will win the audience over with the power of their rock. It's probably better, actually, to have a straight... That's kind of funny, is like having a comedian open for a band, but having a straight band open for... for you guys. I mean, I wouldn't really...
Cross did that. He had, Baby Fat or whatever open up for
who
him.
Who did?
David Cross.
Oh, he did?
He had, like, a normal band open up for him when he was going on tour.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, it was nice. It was, like, nice hanging out and just talking and then getting ready, getting settled for a comedy show.
I really enjoyed seeing the sort of the drifting of the two, of the spheres together of like cool music and comedy, like at Bumbershoot or Sasquatch
from
someone's fucking grandmother.
that Sasquatch guy. He's a Sasquatch. Remember when Sasquatch fought the $6 million man? that was good.
The Sasquatch Festival or any of those festivals. Do you guys are you comedians who play music or are you musicians who are funny?
Oh my God.
Well, I mean, early on, I would have said we were way more comedian than music, but now I feel like we put a lot of our rocket sauce into the music.
Yeah, when we started, it was it seemed like it was more sketch, kind of thing.
But now,
and we were playing with those alternative comedy shows.
We really were just trying to make the greatest album of the year. We're really going for the gold in that respect. But it's still, all of our songs have to have a comedic core. Although our anti-religion song, you say, is not funny. I think it's still funny.
It sounds hilarious.
But, this time around, I don't think we're going to have the big comedic shtick that we had on the last tour, where we had a major set built and the comedy movies.
No.
This time, we're really just... We're just trying to blow people's minds with our music.
So no Liam Lynch shorts this time during the shows?
Not as of now. We still have a couple months before we have to.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas?
Got a few.
Yeah.
You can send those over.
Sure.
Fax those over.
First of all,
I like
opening band of clowns. Really funny. They show up and you're like, okay, guys, here's your clown suits.
it's a band of horses doing clown cover songs.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be so amazing.
What if we came out in blue makeup?
Like the Blooming Group?
Oh, shoot.
I was reading on Yoohoo this morning. There are actually blue people.
What?
There's like a very, very small percentage of human beings are born with a genetic imperfection that causes their pigment to go blue.
Did you think the Smurfs was a documentary?
No.
Okay.
But this is a real story. I'm not joking. And
are all the Smurfs blue?
And then I was thinking... Yeah. Those poor people must have really hated it when Blue Man Group became big. They were like,
oh my God,
being mocked.
These guys are in blueface. That's totally shitty. That's not cool.
So
they're making
racist.
Fun of us.
What is this? This is the 2000s. This is where we're at.
This.
I think it'd be fun if you guys did. I think it'd be fun if you did a tribute to a really specific disorder that had like 30 people. You're like, we really got to do something. Like, you should do your blue pigment charity tribute song.
No.
Okay. All right.
why would you make fun of a serious situation?
I mean, it's not. I don't know. I'm not trying to. It's
very offensive.
Riffing. I thought.
No.
Oh shit. Do you? Would you ever have been in a serious band, or did you kind of need comedy to be the gateway into music?
Well, we tried. I mean, I tried to be in a real band in high school and. Zero people were interested. Well, I mean, we played at one of those high school parties, and I remember we just did covers, and I was just singing straight like Black Sabbath cover and Thin Lizzy or something. I can't remember all the songs we did. I think we did an AC/DC, and people were just really bored, and I was feeling very self-conscious, straight ahead. And then another group of kids that were in the audience. That had just, and we had rehearsed for weeks.
Sure.
And these guys just got together that day and rehearsed, worked up a couple songs, the originals that they wrote that day. And they were like, can we go up now that you guys are done and no one's paying attention? Yeah. We're like, yeah, sure. And they started playing this just thrown together thing, and people were like, "Oh wow, look at that!" And they were the hit of the party, and it was sort of an eye opener for me.
And that band was Big Star.
I actually love Big Star.
No, they're great. Yeah,
that's it's kind of a
tragic story.
It's a secret. It's a sort of a secret, though.
What happened?
That nobody really knows how awesome Big Star is.
It's weird. The only song people tend to know is the song that was the opening of That 70s Show.
What was it?
What song?
Hanging Out.
Oh, they have so many other amazing songs.
Yeah, I know, but that's like the one people always know.
He has a song called 13 that he wrote when he was 13 that's really awesome. And
yeah, Alex Chilton.
Yeah.
Yes.
So good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But
where did he die of?
But Cage, didn't you have like a Simon and Garfunkel type of straight thing before the D?
Yeah, I was always trying to go serious.
But then when me and Cage got together and we were just jamming, we were thinking from our theater roots, what can we do that would be theatrical? And we started working on. We should write the greatest song in the world, and we should call it the greatest song in the world. And we started working on that. We worked on it for a couple of stony weeks, and then we're like, you know what? This is absurd. We'll never be able to write it. Let's write the tribute to the great. And
was that little turn, that little twist.
And then once we played that, we just went out and played at a little coffee shop, and it went over. It's fucking huge. And people were just, at least in my foggy memory banks.
Yeah,
I remember it was just unanimous that everyone was genuflecting and saying, "Yes, this is the greatest thing ever." And ever since then, it was just like, okay, we're only doing funny songs. That became our identity. It was like,
well, a song like that, where it's a superlative in the title of the greatest song in the world, it almost forces you to commit as much as. Because you like another part of the other thing that I think makes you guys work so well is you fucking commit so much to the to the song and the music, and it's just fun. It's just fun to watch.
Well, underneath it though, we do have a serious side. Like, remember the other song that we wrote that we never played for people?
Oh, the first song?
Well, it was about my painful breakup with a girl who dumped me for her poetry teacher, and it was very sincere. At one time I could advise, but now I'm lost in my own pain. Oh, it's just so cheesy.
You guys remember that song?
Yeah. No, I remember it like yesterday. But we'll never play that because...
It's not funny.
It's not funny. I don't think it's very good. I think it's
You
like,
hated it pretty soon after we did it.
Yeah. I think the comedy is kind of like a shield. It protects you from criticism.
Right. I bet if you did that song
you can always just write it off.
It's like, what? We were joking. Yeah. Yeah. What, you took that? You thought that was,
I bet if you did the song now, though, it would be way funnier than it was back then.
What if Puddle of Mud was like, you took Blurry seriously? That was a fucking joke. Oh my God, you perpetrated the greatest.
Who's?
I'm sorry, that's my phone. I forgot to turn it off.
Kyle.
Don't think that I didn't, by the way, notice your Mo Betta Meaty Meat Burgers t-shirt.
Oh, come on.
Fucking awesome.
Representing.
Pico.
Oh, that's
awesome.
It hasn't been open. When was the last time it was open?
Dude, I'm on a diet. All I can think about are Mo Betta Meaty Meat Burgers.
There's a Five Guys. I think
the health department closed them down, though.
Really?
And Okie Dog still stands.
Yeah. I feel like people, like, a lot of people did know the Tenacious D show, but... After High Fidelity, would people kind of go, oh, shit, Jack actually sings?
Well, you know, High Fidelity, I only got High Fidelity because of Tenacious D. John Cusack was a big Tenacious D fan, and he got me in there.
He's a fan of stuff?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy about that?
I don't know him. I just wouldn't have pegged him as a guy who's a fan of stuff.
The record store worked out in Venice Beach. A guy came in. It was a few days before the first D album came out. A guy came in and was like, hey, I just watched this movie, High Fidelity. And a lot of people always brought it up because it was just like, you know, an indie record store and it would always come up. But he's like, and at the end, one of the guys that works at the record store sings a song. And is he an actual singer? It's like, does he have albums out? And I was like, I thought he might have been fucking with me. I was like, well, he has this album we're listening to right now. It's a comedy duo, comedy music. And he's like, but it's like, but he doesn't sing like standards and old soul stuff. I was like, no.
Well,
but
no,
then he came back and then he bought the CD because of your singing.
Wow. Well, I did do on the High Fidelity soundtrack. I do sing that one song.
Barry Jive and the Uptown Five?
Let's Get It On.
Let's Get It On, yeah.
But I keep on looking over to your phone to see if are you distracted? Because I'm distracted by you being distracted, Cage.
No, I just want to turn it off. I feel bad.
Can you turn off Kyle's phone, please?
Spiker has turned off the phone.
Thank you. Oh. But I had something very poignant I wanted to say. Can we take a long pause while I remember?
Pause.
Oh, it wasn't High Fidelity that got us going. What got us going was because we were playing the rooms and people were digging it. We're playing like to 80 and 90 people would come to see our show every time we played. And then it was Mr. Show. When Bob and David of Mr. Show gave us our little HBO shorties.
Yep.
Once that aired, the very first time, like the very next week, we went out to play a show, and it was just like 1,000 people.
Jesus.
And then it was just off to the races from there on out.
How do people know?
We've been playing to a minimum of 1,000.
That was before the interweb.
But that just, it's a testament to the power. And now whenever anyone says, hey, what can we do? We want to be like to the D. It's always like, you know, just get a TV show and you're set.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah. Like, for instance... I haven't seen their live show, but apparently Metalocalypse, mm-hmm. You know this?
Yeah, Brennan Small show.
Hilarious animated heavy metal show.
Yeah.
They go on tour.
He's the most successful like speed metal.
Yeah, he has like the highest charted death metal album of all time.
Isn't that crazy?
That's weird.
What? And they'll go out and play to packed houses all over the nation.
And metal, like big metal.
What's the name of that things? Album?
The album?
Yeah.
I think just death album.
I mean, speed metal is a very small genre. Like, what's the second most selling under Metalocalypse? It's like...
It's got to be like a Slayer album, right?
It's got to be Slayer.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But he's another...
Rain and Blood.
Brendan's another guy who is like... He's a Berklee School of Music. Like, he fucking shreds. Yeah. He's like Kineski that way. Their hands go a million miles an hour up the neck of the guitar and then just totally calm face.
Yeah.
It always freaks me out.
Just playing Yngwie Malmsteen.
Yeah.
But then when they play, they're not really on stage,
it's
right?
It's like a gorilla show where there's a big screen with a bunch of animation on it. And he has like guys from all these old school death metal bands like Obituary and stuff like that playing with him.
So wait, there is live music.
Yeah, they play behind a screen like gorillas.
Right.
Yeah.
But they could easily not. It could just be to tape. Yeah, he doesn't have like to be there.
They could like show their shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is
it's
he
like
there?
Daft Punk? It's like, you know, do they really? There's just two guys in helmets on a fucking pyramid. Do you really think they're playing the stuff? It could be anybody in those things.
If you just really wanted to be a cynical money making scheme, you would say, we're going to send out 10 of these. I'm not going to be in it. I'm going to be in my living room.
Yeah.
You franchise it. You don't have to be there.
No. Ugh. It's a guy fucking with a future helmet pressing a button.
Like
there's
the game developers convention a couple days ago, and I went to like a video game party, and there was a guy who was a DJ. Now, I know there are good DJs in the world, so I'm not disparaging the DJ profession, but this guy just had basically his iPad like mounted on what were two fake turntables, but he wasn't even fake spinning them. It was really just a playlist. He could have emailed a playlist. But he was basically
But it would have been his playlist.
Yeah, exactly. He was just a set piece to look like someone was actually doing something, but there was no mixing.
It's just for some promoter to be able to go, we got a DJ.
Yeah.
Dude, now that there's iPods and playlists, it's got to be the biggest bummer for DJs. They're almost replaced now. Yeah. All you have to do is get a DJ or... Just plug in my iPod. I made a kick-ass playlist last night.
You have to be really good. Who was the DJ you saw that you said was juggling vinyl albums?
It was Beck's DJ for DJ Swamp. DJ Swamp. I saw him on the Mutations tour, and the dude's like throwing up records, changing shit, catching it, mixing it in. It was fucking incredible.
The gimmicks you have to come up with, though, to stay relevant is the juggling.
Since Tom Cruise and Cocktail.
Guys, are we back to clowns? I just saw a Cocktail recently.
I can't take my eyes off it. If I bump into it,
I got the hippie shake.
Yeah,
still can't figure out.
Cocktails and Dreams. That when he pours, he rings.
That was the name of the thing. It was so on the nose, it had to be Cocktails. My dream is to open a place called Dreams. Well, you want to think outside the box for a hair?
So is it really Tom Cruise taking your role from Rock of Ages?
Yes.
Wow.
Stacey Jacks.
Stacey Jacks. It's going
to
be interesting.
Did he contact you to say, I want to meet the guy who originated this role?
We worked together for months in secret in a rehearsal bunker neath the Hollywood Hills.
Do you think he's going to pull off the metal vocal that's required?
He's not singing, is he?
I believe he is singing.
He can do everything.
At this point, I believe like he's one of those guys that has a commitment. Like, yeah, he'll probably pull it off. Like, when he focuses on a thing, he just does it.
Dude, he puts all his sci-fi powers to bear.
Are you going to say that?
There it is.
All of it.
It was the elephant in the room.
Oh, my God.
I think a song called Elephant in the Room would be amazing where you just talk about all that stuff. And the chorus is just, there's an elephant in the room.
I think we did it. You know, it's just guys hanging out.
You're like, I was just saying the thing that everyone was thinking.
What an asshole. Everyone thinks I'm a dick.
He put his mind to it.
He has extra special powers.
Yeah.
More than you and me.
If anything, I probably just initiated a few people wanted to get involved.
You're helping out the cause.
I don't know what his portrayal is going to be.
But, I saw him. All my stories are fucking Hollywood bubble stories. But I met him one time at an event. It was like a fundraiser
for Mel Brooks.
For Mel Brooks. Yeah, I don't ever see celebrities except for that one Mel Brooks thing. But no, he was there and we were talking and I felt the need to tell him that I loved Magnolia. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was amazing in Magnolia. He should get with Paul Thomas Anderson and do some more stuff because that collaboration was my favorite of his stuff. And he's like, yeah. And he seemed a little off-put by it. And then we didn't speak again after that. I was like, wow, what did I say?
Did you go home going,
I should have said
Cruise?
Top Gun. What did I? Sure. And then I found out later that Paul Thomas Anderson was making this kick-ass Scientology movie.
That's right, yeah.
With Philip Seymour Hoffman playing, you know, L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh.
And I was like, of course that's why that a wall of ice came down when I mentioned Paul Thomas Anderson, his former friend. The betrayal of the Scientology.
I believe this knife is yours, Paul Thomas Anderson. I pulled it from my back.
Maybe it's a loving tribute. How does he know it's going to be scary? Yeah.
It's true.
Is that possible?
By the way, Tom Cruise was... I thought he was great in Tropic Thunder. I imagine everyone listening to this podcast has seen Tropic Thunder, but if you have not, the movie was fucking phenomenal.
It's great.
So phenomenal.
Yeah.
You okay?
No, it's just a power sniff to go along with that.
Power sniff.
It was a power sniff of thanks.
I was wondering why the table moved your way. It was such a powerful sniff.
It's a running thing me and Kyle have when you make a good, powerful point or you win or something, that's when the sniff is
released. My mom would always drop that after she'd say something passive-aggressive. Yeah. Well, that's fine if you don't want to come over this weekend.
Yeah.
Is that sensory punctuation that you're throwing at me?
I must seem really passive-aggressive because of my allergies then.
Yeah, I think everyone's my mom being passive-aggressive at me. But I want to kind of – I'd love to have you guys do a couple songs, but I do want to talk a little bit about Rise of the Phoenix, which what is the drop date on that?
Drop date is May 15th.
May 15th. So I was fascinated by this album because it is what I was not expecting is that it is autobiographical. It's like this autobiographical journey from the last D album to this one.
Yeah.
And it – like the first line of the first song is just
Well, a lot of people, if they had a lackluster performance on an album, the next album, they would just try to ignore that last album even happened. They would sweep it under the rug and say, "Here comes another great album." But we thought it was important to face the box office failure head on.
What was the line? It was like, no one.
When the pick of destiny was released, it was a bomb. And all the critics said that the D was done. The sun had set and the chapter had closed. But one thing no one thought about was the D would rise again, just like the phoenix. We'll fucking rise again.
That song and then the Ballad of Hollywood Jack, I thought was fucking
powerful.
And Rage Cage.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Yeah, that was the elephant in the room, you know?
Is there on any level, are you, it really feels like, even though it is a comedy album, you're sort of making fun of it, you are kind of taking control, but it does feel like it comes from a sincere place. Like you're really kind of working through some stuff that you had to deal with.
It's true. And I'm glad you picked up on that. Because when we wrote the song, we were thinking, it's no secret. I've had some big breaks as a result of Tenacious D that maybe, KG has been left in the dust in some respects. but just because there may be some emotional rawness there doesn't mean that we shouldn't mine it for comedic gold. So we sang a song about it, how, I have gone on and become Hollywood Jack, mm-hmm. and Kyle has slowly fermented and become the Rage Cage.
And I'm working with DJ Jazzy Jeff.
And a lot of bands would just ignore that and say, no, everything's cool, man. Everything's fine. Look at us. We're both kicking ass. But we thought, no, let's take this head on. Let's tell the tale. Hollywood Jack and the Rage. And of course, it's embellished a bit. It's not really all real, but
that's more rock and roll than most rock bands. Because you're actually dealing with a real thing.
Yeah, but we like to take it and amplify the truth till it takes on like an epic scale. But I'm proud of that song in particular because of its dramatic feel. You know, it's very. It's very emotional in a way that none of our songs had been before, you know. It's very, scaled some emotional terrain.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but on the cover of the album Rise of the phoenix rising from the ashes looks very similar to a dick and balls. I don't know if...
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
Well,
it's like a... You know how you have a balls and like a cock stalk that sticks up if you have a boner?
Cock stalk?
Yeah, yeah.
You could just call it a cock.
Well, but it's the stalk of it that makes it stand up, right?
I'm aware of what you're talking
about. Right, so it's very
it's a hydraulic
like
phenomenon.
So it looks like a very very similar in the album cover.
I think that maybe says more about you.
Whoa.
You know, what you're seeing. All I see is a tremendous, majestic firebird.
Jonah, did you force your head down onto the album when I gave it to you, or is that just something that...
Well, yeah, that's just because I'm kind of an ornithology fanatic,
right,
and I really was just wanted to get a closer look.
I'm an elemental ornithologist. Yes.
I can see how you might be confused though, because the head is purple,
right,
and the muscly round legs are blue,
right,
but yeah, we had the concept for that album cover art when we were just thinking, look, it's Rise of the Phoenix. The cover should be a phoenix rising. And we did a rough sketch of it, and we sent it off to this artist that the producer was friends with. He said, this guy's the best artist. He is the best, and he's the best like heavy metal concept guy you will find. So we're like, yeah, we sent it off to him, and he came back with this painting of this phoenix that was so sort of disturbing and real and scary that I was like, no, that can't be the cover. That's just too nightmarish. And then I went back and I looked at it the next day and I thought, it has to be the cover. It's one of the most magnificent things I've ever seen.
What a change.
Well, it was just, you know, sometimes when you see a thing for the first time, you're like, oh no, I don't like it. And then you come back, and once you've had a little time to marinate, you go, no.
But it affected you.
Yeah. It stayed with me. I kept on thinking about it. And it was like the same way that I felt when I saw No Country for Old Men. Mm-hmm. That ending was so fucking harsh that I was like, I don't like it. Why did they have to end it like that? Why did fucking what's his name get killed? And why did that, spoiler alert, have to end like that? But then after a couple of days, I was like, that was the best movie of the year.
You're still thinking about it.
I'm still thinking about it.
It has to be that. Yeah.
And that's the way it is with the cock and ball cover. I mean, the Rise of the Phoenix.
Oh, my God.
Here's a question for Hollywood Jack. Is it, when you achieve the level of success that you have achieved, which is, for if you're a comedian, you're a comedic actor, performer, like, that's the biggest that you, is it, how do you, is it weird to, when you can do any movie you want, like, how do you pick a movie? When you go from like, oh, I'm just an actor and I hope I get cast in something, to you can do anything you want. Is that even more scary, or does it feel awesome?
I've really just followed my nose. I don't know. It's just, you know, you work with the people that seem like that are interesting to you. If those people, I'm not one of those guys who's writing all my own material and lining it up 10 years in advance like some people. I just go with if there's someone that's really interesting that I want to jam with, and then that's what I'll do. But I don't really have the 10-year plan.
I have heard of some people with the weird 10-year plan. Where I heard when Will Smith first popped.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure this is an oversimplification of what happens, but it's like they went into an office
and
they looked at every kind of movie that was a huge hit, and they mapped out his career for like the next several years. And when you look at his career, like, oh yeah, he did this, and he did a superhero movie, and then he did a drama, and then he did this thing, and he did, like. It's right. Every kind of movie.
Wow.
That would be huge.
Yeah, and it all started with that Alien one.
Independence Day.
I think we might have just thought of the concept for the next Tenacious D
Wasn't
album.
Wasn't it 6 degrees of separation?
That's not the one that got him going.
That got him acting respect, where people were like, yeah. Oh, he can actually act in things. Minute, yeah. And then Independence Day was the one that made him a box office
smash,
where they uploaded a virus to alien technology with a MacBook. Was the
maybe our next album could be Dependence Day? No,
oh, fucking sweet. About it, it's the D stops an alien invasion with the power of rock.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh wait, it would just be called Pendence Day. Tenacious D, Pendence Day.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to?
It would
play
definitely it? Be the dequel.
Can you play it? Jesus Christ!
Oh God!
Sorry. Somebody had to.
I applaud and weep. At the same time, would you mind playing a song or 20?
I wish we had some guitars here.
Let's play a song or two. Do you know what we should play?
No.
All right.
Are you going to play stuff from Phoenix?
Yeah. Of course, right?
What are we going to celebrate the old stuff?
No, but I do have one request.
No, we could play one new one and one old one.
What's Radio Free Europe, fucker.
Oh. It was more like Radio Free Europe, fucker.
So it made it, yeah, it's all part of it.
Have I not been hearing that song right all these years?
That's Radio what they meant, man.
Fucker. Well, Michael Stipe seems like he has a great sense of humor right off the bat.
He cornered Jack at a party one time.
Michael Stipe cornered you at a party?
I did, yeah. And he was in the middle of talking. He busted out a little makeup kit and like applied some golden eye shadow.
Oh
no! Which I was like, just intimidated. Like, what? Why are you putting on
no
makeup
words
right now in the middle of a sentence? It's just us talking. You don't have to do that for my benefit.
Do we warm up too?
You can warm up.
Is there time for warm ups?
Yeah, warm up.
Okay, hold on. I just took a major singing lesson from a dude named Seth Riggs. He's like the best in the industry.
Hello, ding dong.
He's 81 years old, and he was like Ray Charles and Michael Jackson's main vocal coach. So I know what I'm doing here. Charged me like $400, and then at the end he was like, what you should do is make the songs lower so they're more in your range. Just transpose them down to a lower key. Like, really? That's the advice. Okay.
You really do have to do the brrr thing that vibrates your vocal cords and warms them up.
Well, a part of his philosophy is when you sing the high notes, make your throat go, make your vocal box go vertical instead of horizontal.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure how. I didn't understand the concept of what am I supposed to do? You got to make the vowel, avoid certain vowels. Like, don't sing, sing, I don't have it yet. I need to go back and pay more money for him once again to tell me, just sing the songs lower, but then also do this. I got it. Go. Yeah. All right. This is a song for all the roadies out there. It's called Roadie. Well, it's 3 p.m., time to lug the gear. Got to get it on the stage. My muscles flex, my fucking sweat will save the day. When I check the mic, I fuck a check the mic, I fuck a check, I check a 1, 2, 3, I plug it in, I make it sound as good as can be. Cause a rock is a rock, but the road is a roll. Gotta take the mic, you gotta take control. Gotta get that shit up on that fucking stage. Cause the roadie know what the roadie knows, and the roadie knows that he wears black clothes and he hides off in the shadows off the stage. Because the roadie looks 1,000 miles with his eyes. And when the crowd roars, brings a teardrop to the roadie's eyes. Tears of pride, because he brought you the show. But you will never know, he's changing the strings while hiding in the wings. No matter how hard, the show must go on. And then a beautiful girl come to me, she say, hey, can I suck your dick? I say, yes, I am in love. But then she quickly say, I sucked your dick, and now give me that backstage pass. I do not want you, roadie, I want Cage's chode. Ah, I'm standing at the threshold of your dreams. Without me, there'd be no sound from those amps. Without me, there'd be no lights on the stage. But you don't applaud for me. No, I am the roadie. Lonesome warrior searching for his soul. Yeah, I am the roadie. I make the rock go.
Awesome.
What was your request, Kiss?
Wait.
What? Did you just... I see some whispering going on. What if they whispered...
Don't worry, I can read lips.
And Kyle just turned around and hit me in the head with a guitar and they ran out.
That'd be a good end to a podcast. Forever.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to go out on one... like
go out on top of Chris.
Good, yeah. This is body.
Oh, yes.
Dead body with the guitar shrapnel. I'd be good for...
Wait. A couple shorties? Maybe a... Okay.
Do you want to intro it?
Yeah, this is a song that we wrote that's an inspirational jam. Just about being the best. It's called To Be the Best.
To be the best. best. You got to pass the test. You got to make it all the way to the top of the mountain. You can do it again. To feel the high, you got to learn to fly. You got to take it to the sky on the wings of an eagle. You're the best in the world. You are the best, but you say you don't know. You got the touch, now come on, let it show. You can be free, but you know that you gotta believe in the things that you're dreaming. You search for the meaning. It's very revealing. The power of healing is what you are feeling. You gotta believe that you're simply the best.
Now I know I don't you I'm I don't presuppose that you are performing Monkees, but I have two song requests and one of them is very short, so it's really like 1.1 song request. Uh-oh. And you can tell me to fuck myself in the face if you don't want to do it.
They would do that anyway.
One of them is Double Team because I was singing it in the shower this morning.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Is that something you feel
that's
comfortable?
Something we could do,
but you don't have to if you don't want to do it.
I
just
do it.
You.
Yeah. It's been an amazing podcast. You know, nothing stirs up the sexual juices like an incredibly creative podcast. I just need to make love. I'd like to make love to every single listener of this podcast. If only it were possible. I'd like to fuck the whole nation. If it were physically possible. Fuck the nation, now it's out of control. Fuck the nation in every hole. Fuck the nation, now you're making me scream. The nation, fuck the nation. How's it going? That's the first thing I say to you. How's it going? Are you flowing?
Whoa,
listen, honey. Thinking about a couple things to say to you. Showing, growing. Oh man, I'd like to place my hand upon your fucking sexy ass and squeeze. Your blouse and your underpants, then take a look, cause hear me and KG come naked out of the side hatch with the oils and perfume and incense. Now you're grooving, put on a cool 70s groove, a funky groove to fuck to, a funky groove to fuck to. It's all about sex supreme. We like scream dreams. Have you ever been worked down? But you guys do a hunt for your snatch. Woo! That's what I'm offering you. You step into our room, and then you smell the perfume. You lay upon our roundish bed, and then you feel a tickling on your head. It's KG with the feather and the French. A tickle, la la, look at baby, he got the tools. And then you feel something down by your feet. It's me, it's JB. I'm sucking upon your toes. We don't mind sucking on toes. Good luck finding a boyfriend who sucks toes now. Having sex with me and KG. Now you're talking double team. Supreme.
sounded way better than I did in my shower.
One last request. I'm going to admit, in the early days of Napster, when it was okay to steal things, I may have just put Tenacious D into the search bar and gotten a bunch of bootleg live performances. I have a performance of you somewhere. I'm assuming it might be Largo. You guys performed and sang the lyrics to Star Trek theme.
Oh, Cage would not be able to do that without rehearsals.
Cannot do it.
Come on, give it a try.
Sorry. No. I remember. That's it a great
is,
one,
dude,
though.
Dude, that is a great one. We should work that shit up.
How about an a cappella version?
We should always have that on tap.
I'll start you off.
Okay. These lyrics were written by Gene Roddenberry, and I contend that he never intended for them to be used in the Star Trek opening credits. But because he wrote them and officially they are part of the song, he got another check and included. He would also get his weekly check for being the richest, you know, TV show creator. But he would also get another greedy check for the song, which he really had no part. He shouldn't have taken half of that money. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, it's still kind of, they are kind of incredible lyrics. All right. Ready? Beyond the rim of the starlight. Wait a second. I also want to say, I think these lyrics are written from the point of view of Captain Kirk's lover that he left on Earth to go on journeys throughout the universe. And she's just looking up at the stars going, God, I love that man. I miss his boner. I want him back on Earth giving it to me. Good. And she's jealous that he's out there fucking alien women on different blue planets. Okay, here we go. Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight. I know he'll find in star-clustered reaches love, strange love a star woman teaches. And I know his journey ends never. His Star Trek must go on forever. But tell him as he wanders the starry sea, remember me.
A fucking podcast. That is how you end a podcast. Tenacious D, thank you so much for being here. Rise of the Phoenix, May 15th. KG, JB, I am hugging you both in my heart. Thanks for being here. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.